Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to yet another Brad and Body Podcast. We had the great Sam McDaniel last week, Body. What a great one that was, and we got some great feedback.
Yeah, we have, and also, of course, we're right in the heart of the blitz right now. But we've got an interesting guest for us, a blast from the past today. So I'll let you do the intros, Brad, and let's get right into it.
Thank you. Where are they now? We love this segment. And today I've got someone who is a superstar of our league, born in San Francisco and attended Cal State Bakersfield. And just a little side one here, who was coached by the great Body Die, who we believe is in about his 90s now, and he lives on the same street as the man, Brian Gorshin's father, and we love hearing those little stories. Ed is a great man. This person also played in the first original Adelaide 36ers. That's right, in 1983, because before that, they were known as the City of Adelaide Eagles, as Body would know.
Yep.
In 84 and 85, he went to the powerhouse Geelong Supercats. 86, 88, that's when I start to remember this man shaking and baking as he does for the Newcastle Falcons. But to me, when you think of the Hobart Devils, this is the man he played there in 89 to 94. He is a four-time NBL All-Star. He scored over 7,500 points in his career, mind you, at an average of 26.5 points per game, I believe.
How good
over
is that?
12 seasons. Unbelievable. He yep. had 22 40-point games in his career. 22. Unbelievable. In his career, four seasons, he averaged more than 30 points a game. What a lot of people don't know is he's actually a superstar actor in appearing in films such as The Mask, Superman Returns, and The Sapphires. He is one of the smoothest players that I've ever had the privilege of watching, and still looks like he could lace up a boot today, yeah. mind you. And we are talking of none other than the great Wayne McDaniel. Hello, Wayne.
Hello, Brad. Hello, Body. Wow, what an introduction. I could get that introduction, just put that on a little file and log it away. I could just save that and put it on repeat.
Like, it's your resume.
Done, we're done. Thank you so much for joining us today. See you later.
Exactly.
No, well, that's right. That's the thing, Wayne. We had Bruce Bolden on a couple of weeks ago too, because we seem to sort of get caught up on, and no offence intended to any of these players, but, you know, Leroy yep. Loggins was one of the all-time greats, Cal Bruton, James Crawford. We sort of get caught up chatting about those sorts of players. And then there yep. are players like yourself that were right up there with them, you know, absolutely with them. The competition was terrific. I'm sure when you arrived in 83, the level of the competition would have surprised you, wouldn't it?
Would have surprised me, but you know what's funny now, Body, and Brad, as I look back on it now, people say, oh, look at the evolution of basketball in Australia, the evolution of the NBL, and obviously it sticks out like it's plain as day that the Australian players are better, they're bigger, they're more athletic, they're more skillful.
Yep.
I would put many of the U.S. imports back in the day, mid-80s into the early 90s, up against many of the imports
yes.
today. And yes. I know Corey Williams would probably, you know, we'd probably go back and forth on this in terms of, you know, a Bryce Cotton versus a Leroy Loggins and that. But that's great. But I mean, you look at a Mark Davis, look at a yep. James Crawford, look at a Bruce Bolden, look at an Al Green, his athleticism and his tenacity. Yep. I mean, you look yep. at those kind of guys, and I would put those guys up against any of the U.S. imports in this burgeoning flourishing NBL that we know today.
You know, the one thing I'll say with that, tell me one of those imports now that has a post-up game like the guys you just mentioned.
It's a different game.
They don't. Yeah. Like, you know, I remember, like, when I think of you and, like, Bruce Bolden, you know, a very good yeah. friend of mine, you got that ball, you would either post-up, turn around, fade away, or turn and face, right? And
yeah.
then, you know, it's that quick step or the little jump shot. That's not the game now. Right. So it's I love hearing all these stories, and that's why I love Where Are We Now. Can I take you back? Where did you start? Obviously born in San Fran. Talk to us yep. and how basketball started for Wayne McDaniel.
Wow. Okay. So in San Francisco, I sort of really got going kind of 13, 14, kind of junior high school. Went to Pelton Junior High School in the city, which we had a great team that first year I played. And then just kind of grew and kind of developed my signature shot, I guess you could say.
Still got it today. Still got it today. I see it all the time on Instagram, and I love it.
Sam is so fundamentally more sound than me, but hey, well, that's another story. So from junior high school, and actually, funny thing, the reason why I actually took basketball in junior high school is because Mr. Moore, the teacher, who's the music teacher, said, I'm going to give you two options. You can play the trumpet, or you can go out for the team, for the varsity team. And it was like, I love Miles Davis, but I'm not ready to go there right now. Got on the junior high school team, and away I went. And then went to John O'Connell, which was a trade school. So you had to have a trade to go to John O'Connell in the city of San Francisco. I chose auto mechanics and electronics as my trade. So repairing small engines and mini bikes and little two-stroke and four-stroke motors, that was my trade. Moved from John O'Connell, had great 2 years there, became all-city. Played with a guy who played with the 36ers for a season, Orlando Phillips, who was drafted by the Lakers. Yeah, I think he had a season and a half with the Lakers, big Orlando. So he was kind of like my rivalry in high school in San Francisco, one of my big rivalries. So 78, graduated from high school. And then I had I was hit by a car in that summer, compound fracture on my fibula and tibula. And then doctor said, look, you're never going to play. It's just the way it's not going to set properly, blah, blah, blah. So there is the evolution of this kind of thing I kind of got on in terms of mind power and the beliefs and the power of our thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. And I just said, look, how it actually happened, cut a long story and make it longer. Reverend Ike, I don't know if you guys know who he is. So he was this big televangelist in the 70s, this African-American who was very slick and, you know, had all the success. But underneath all of his jabber was about mind power. And my mom used to have his sermons on every day when I'd come home from school, and I'd sit and listen to him. And she said, no, you can't watch Lost in Space. You got to watch Reverend Ike and da-da-da. And all that kind of all that positivity kind of washed over me. And that's where I kind of began this kind of flirtation with, you know, mind power and visualization and later meditation. But so San Francisco and John O'Connell, and I came back my senior year, led the city in scoring that year. I think I averaged 35 a game, which was fantastic. And then I went to a junior college, San Francisco Junior College, and Orlando was on that team too. Orlando Phillips was on that team. We won the state championship. We went to the national championships. Two fabulous years there. Like, we had, you know, awesome teams. I think we scored 190 points in one game, beating San Mateo City College, I believe. I think it was 190. Yeah, it was crazy.
Wow, how many did you have? 140?
Oh, God, I can't remember. I think we had like six guys with like 20 or more or something. Yeah, so it's just ridiculous. Like, we were
so you only played a few minutes then.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of a Steph Curry one. Yeah, take him out of the fourth quarter, he's got his 40 already. That year was fantastic. And then went to Cal State, 2 years there. First year was fantastic. Second year was even better. We made the Division II Final Four, went into the tournament to play Doc Rivers' Marquette team. We played Horace Grant and Larry Nance at Clemson. That was an amazing experience. And Doc Rivers, and I just remember meeting him after the game and shaking his hand. And, you know, you knew he was going to be a great leader in the NBA. He just had that. He had that knack about him. He had that basketball savvy about him. He was great. You know, he was fantastic. They blew us out. They beat us by 21 or 22 points. But Oliver Lee was on that team, so they had a great team. And the Clemson team was fantastic. Illinois State was in that other bracket with us as well. And then, finished that senior year at Cal State. And then kind of lulled around. I didn't get drafted and sort of had a kind of a gap period, you know, like a kind of a gap year and as such, kind of half year where I went back to San Francisco. And then got an offer from the recreational director, John Greenberg, who said, look, I've received this letter from a recruiter, Dave Atkins in Iowa. There might be a place for you. I still have the letter. I still have the letter from 83 where Dave said, look, John, we may be able to place Wayne in Australia. There may be a team that could use him as a small forward. I'll get back to you later. A little short two paragraph thing. And I still have it. So, that was the deal. So, what happened was, before I committed to come to Australia, my mother's girlfriend, Barbara, had dated an Australian guy from Melbourne.
Well, there's a problem. There's the problem right there.
That was it. That nailed it down for me, because she said, look, don't go to the Philippines. I had some guys that had gone to the Philippines and played professional there. She said, no, don't go there. Culturally, you're not going to be able to. It's just going to be too hard. And then the other offer was to go to Israel to play. And she said, yeah, interesting, but it's, again, culturally, it's not going to be a good fit for you.
Yeah.
So come to Australia. You'll love it. You'll love Melbourne. If you go to Adelaide, it's like a smaller version of Melbourne. You'll love it. And that sealed the deal for me, basically. My barber said, look, this is, your decision is easy. Like, you'll love Australia. And that was the kind of clincher for me.
And that's 38 years ago.
Yes.
So how does that? What was your intention? 1 year? 2 years? What was your intention?
I didn't really have an intention, buddy, to be honest. I was just a free spirit. You know, I'm from San Francisco, man, born in 1960. I'm an original black hippie. It was kind of like, hey, look at this adventure. Look at this adventure.
Of course. Yeah, what was I thinking?
Yeah, exactly. And it was sort of like, just remember flying in on the Qantas flight over Sydney and just seeing every house had a red roof. And I was like, whoa, this is amazing. You know, just this amazing visual effect. And then, of course, the gorgeous beach. And then I land in Sydney and then I get into Adelaide and I meet Jeff Coles. And he says, and I've got this short little leather jacket on. And he says, mate, you won't be needing that today. And it was 42 degrees. And then we went straight from the airport. I still have my bags in his truckish van holding thing. And then we went straight to Forestville and we did a clinic there for about an hour and a half. And there, I can't remember, but there was probably about 120 kids. And it was probably 50 degrees in the tin shed day. I did this clinic and then they just kept pumping me with this bottled water, had like tables of bottled water, and I'd have a break every 5 minutes. And, all right, guys, back on the line. And that was my initiation in Adelaide.
I got to say, I'm surprised you stayed 38 years if the first person you met was Jeff Coles, because Jeff, you know, we both know Jeff Coles.
What a character! He's a movie waiting to happen. Like, I mean,
an R-rated
movie. Crocodile Dundee 3. He's going to be cast as the co-lead. Like, it's a no-brainer. Yeah.
So tell me something, Wayne. Your body, you're very chiseled, muscular. Is that natural? Were you just lucky to be blessed genetically, or do you work hard to maintain it? Because that was the immediate thing that sort of stood out about the fact when you walked on the basketball court, you go, wow, this guy's cut.
Well, in high school, I was Leroy. My physique was a Leroy Loggins physique. I was so slim. I was so, you know, I almost had like a swimmer's body, very square shoulders, very slim with this big afro. You know, rocking up and down the court with my number 33 for John O'Connell. So it was really probably, I'd say probably Newcastle, because in Newcastle, Mr. Jensen, I think was one of our sponsors, or he might've been our physio. I think Lee's passed on now, but he ran a Nautilus Center in Newcastle. And I used to go all the time. So in Newcastle, I moved my whole physicality to another level because I was working as a builder's laborer on the Garden City Shopping Center in Newcastle. So I would do that from 7 a.m. till about 2:30-ish, have a break, and then either go to the Nautilus Center or go straight to Broadmeadow and train. So 3 times a week I'd go train at Nautilus. Amazing. The other days in the week I'd go from working as a builder's laborer on the Garden City site. And then I'd either go to Nautilus or I'd go straight to training and then do Nautilus after. So that's where I started to kind of pump up and get, you know, and look at, you know, as I say to Sam, you know, make weight room moves to the basket, big power moves to the basket. So yeah, that's where my physique started to kind of build and kind of blossom up.
I love picking the brain of people who played in the era that you're talking about to now.
Mm.
We had no, and you were like a little bit before me, but there was no, you know, weight guy. You just went and did your own weights. There was no, you know, what are you going to eat? You eat what you could. Mm. And if Macca's was on the way home, you had it because, you know, you're working 12 hours a day and then 100%. You come into training at night. Do you look now and think, oh man, I wish I had what they had, ice baths and everything. And you think, what would have that done to your career?
Oh man, that's such an interesting question, Brad. Well, I remember in Adelaide, I remember I had the first time I had a Chico roll, and I thought, God, these things are so savory and just so yummy and so, like, you know, you can just. And then the first time I had a Lamington was like, oh my goodness, these things are so addictive, you know. So a Chico roll, a Lamington, a sausage roll. The first time I ever had a sausage roll was at this little place in Adelaide, just a little spot, and it was so fresh and just so homemade. And I was like, oh my God, I got to get out of this place. Like, I can't keep going. You know what I mean? It was just so dangerous. Yeah, yeah. No wonder I became a vegan when I went to Tadsley. But I mean, yeah. So things like, you know, steams and need these massages and all that. Like I didn't really kind of experience the luxury of that until I got to Hobart. That's when I kind of thought, well, you know, I mean, I think I was probably at the physical, my physical peak, you know, in those early years, especially with the Devils. So, you know, Roman, I'd get a massage from Roman once a week, at least, sometimes even before the games. Sometimes I'd do light weights before the game. I started to get into like salt baths and things like that, using, you know, lots of Epsom salt and things like that for recovery. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the NBL on the verge of full-time professionalism.
See, it's none of like, you know, when you finish training, you're like, guys, let's go and get a dog's eye, you know, the good old meat pie, you know what I mean? Let's go get a dog's eye with some sauce. That just doesn't happen nowadays, man. You'd be spending 6 months in Fat Man's Class, because that's right. What they used to call it in the Kings, what we had. If you were overweight, you had to get up at 6 a.m. and do your Fat Man's Class to get it all off.
Yeah. It's so professional now, Brad, isn't it, in that way, like, you know. Even Sam, I look at Sammy and, you know, his diet, and I'm saying, what are you eating? He's like, oh, and I'm having a little bit of this and a little bit of that and things. And I'm like, well, God, like, oh, it's just, my diet was strict when I got to Hobart. But up to then, like before that, I would pretty much eat what I wanted, you know, like just, it was a totally different reality. But that's beautiful to see that.
Talk to us how you've gone, like Adelaide, Geelong, Newcastle, Hobart. That was your career. Yep. What took you to teams? Was it a team saying, look, we're going in a different direction? Was it you saying, no, I'm looking for this? What sort of took you from one team to the next?
The only decision I ever made in terms of going to an NBL team that was really wrapped around money was going to Hobart. The other decisions I made were 90% based on basketball and lifestyle. Now, having said that, I love Tasmania because as a kid, growing up in Northern California, I'd go to summer camps in Camp Mendocino, which is up near the border of California and Oregon. Every summer we'd go there for summer camp. So I loved, you know, it's where I learned how to fish. It's where I learned how to canoe. It's where I learned how to pitch a tent. It's where I learned, you know, I mean, I learned all these skills, survival skills as such. So Tassie was an easy fit for me. But, you know, so going from Adelaide to Geelong was a situation where I love the fact that I was on the verge of naturalizing because I was married. I was about to get married, and it was sort of like, well, Cal rang me up and said, look, you can come here, play as an American until you get natural, kind of like a Bryce Cotton situation. And that was, you know, wasn't really to do with money. I worked as a shoe salesman in Geelong to kind of supplement my basketball sort of income. Went to the Clark shoe fitting factory in Melbourne and did a shoe fitting course and worked at the Vogue shoe store in Geelong as a shoe salesman to supplement my income when I played for the Supercats for 2 years. So that was just wins, a good team. Here's a chance for me to join a good team with James and with Brad and you know, and Young Hope, you know, rest in peace. What a great shooter. Yeah. So yeah, that was a basketball related decision, obviously close to Melbourne. I loved Melbourne too. And then to go from Geelong to Newcastle, again, primarily a basketball related decision. But then I knew Newcastle had beautiful beaches. I love Redhead, spent a lot of time there, you know, and it's where, and up in Newcastle is where I kind of got into, was kind of like the origins of my evolution into meditation and visualization. Quick story with that is the surfer Mark Richards. So yep. They had a BHP had a seminar that we went to. All the Falcons went to it. Sean Dennis, Michael Johnson, all of us went to it. About, you know, visualization and the power of the mind and self-talk and all this sort of stuff. And those guys were like, what is this? Like, it's American, you know, this newfangled American, da 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 da. Well, Mark Richards was one of the guys that took it to heart. And I took it to heart and kind of went along with it and kind of used it and, you know, started using it in terms of, you know, game and just my life and, you know, just to be a calmer person and things like that. So That was sort of the evolution to go into Newcastle lifestyle, and it was the team and things like that. That was that decision. And from Newcastle to Hobart was not purely money, but certainly, you know, the money had something to do with it. you're only in this game for a certain amount of time.
Absolutely. Well, it was that time of the year. It was that time of the NBL where it started to really, you could not work now. Is basically, it started to get to that stage where you didn't have to have a day
job. Exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right, Brad. And that's the only time I went to a team where I was pretty much full-time player. Well, I was in effect a full-time player. Yeah.
We asked this.
Other than that, I had seconding.
Yeah, we had Carl on. I just wanted to ask you. We had him on a few weeks ago, and he had to renounce his citizenship. Are you a dual citizen or are you an Australian?
I'm a dual citizenship. I didn't have to. Here's a funny story.
Yeah.
So I'm working as a promotions officer in David Jones in Sydney for Adidas. And the lady comes up to the counter and she's an American lady. She says, "Oh, where are you from?" I said, "San Francisco." And she said, I'm from Austin." I went, "Oh my God, did you bring any barbecue?" She goes, "No, sorry." I go, "What do you do?" She says, "I work for the American consulate in Canberra." In Canberra. I said, "Oh, in Canberra, okay." And she said, "Are you an Australian citizen?" I went, "Yes." And she goes, "Have you denounced your U.S. citizenship?" I go, "No, I actually have the papers in my drawer at home. I've never actually filled out the papers to fill them in." And she said, "Don't do it." She said, "Do you want to have dual citizenship?" I said, "Yeah, eventually. I want to keep my U.S. citizenship." She said, "Don't do it. Don't fill it out. Just leave it. And when you're ready to go back and reapply, it'll be a much easier process for you." So that's basically what I did.
Wow.
That's basically what I did. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, now I don't ever remember you as a player flopping or playing for, acting at all. So it intrigues me how you, post-basketball, went into acting. Of all the things you've described, you've become an actor. I mean, I never saw you. I mean, you played hard and you played like a man, the way Brad and I like seeing guys play. No, they sort of fall over when somebody brushes past them, crap.
It wasn't that. Yeah, no. It just wasn't the thing to do back then. Just didn't do it. Yeah.
No, you didn't. But so acting, how does that come
about? Acting came about sort of when I was at Cal State. Actually, wait, no, I have to be truthful now. I have to go way back. I have to go back to Mr. Moore's class at Pelton and doing drama and doing the play Of Mice and Men, which I ended up doing in Sydney as well later on, later years after. But just doing plays, reading Shakespeare when I was about 14-ish, 15 in there. So reading Othello, reading King Lear, and just loving the process of acting, the kind of, the performance side of it, but also just the research and the application and the ability to be present in a character kind of took hold of me. And then when I went to Cal State Bakersfield, I didn't do a lot of it, but it's also where I started to do voice work, was when at Cal State as well. So they kind of merged in together. And I did a few little bits and pieces in terms of drama and theater. But it was only when I moved to Sydney in 2000, got an agent in 2000, and then I did a play at the Melbourne Theatre Company for the Comedy Festival in 2000. And that was my first kind of stage production in Australia. And I was just doing a Zoom link in Melbourne. The guy was asking me this. So I think I've done nine major stage productions in Sydney, probably 12 or 13 TVCs, which is another word for commercial, and probably 15, including Risen, which I did last year, probably 15 movie appearances.
Wow.
So yeah, the last movie appearance I did was, there's two really, I did Reckoning, which was Aidan Young, that's on Netflix now. That's only US Netflix though. So I did that, great character. And then I did this Australian Canadian production called Risen, 2021, where I played a newscaster, a news CNN anchorman, which was fantastic. So that was last year. Yeah, this year, earlier this year.
Yeah, I know when I was watching Sapphires and suddenly you came on the screen, it was like, hey, I just won.
I know that guy.
It was a real buzz. It really was. It was like, there was a long ago when Mission Impossible was shooting its, a season in Australia. And there was one time where I saw Leroy Loggins running around as a terrorist and as one of the henchmen in the background. So I don't know how that came about, but that was a real buzz too. But
see, you never told me about that one. Wow. aquarium on that one.
Yep, but Sapphires, that was a role, you know.
Such a beautiful shoot, you know. It was a 17-hour day, hanging out with Deborah Millman and Jessica Marlboy and director Wayne Blair, and I'm singing on set. So I'm, as we cut and go back to the trailer, I'm into our trailer rooms and stuff. I'm coming around singing Sam Cooke. Darling, you, singing Sam Cooke to Jessica Marlboy. Gotta go. And she's like, no, one more line. I'm like, oh, we gotta go. So it was a blast. It was fun. It was such a fun shoot. Long day. It was shot down in Camden, which is about a 3.5-hour drive south of Sydney. But that was a beautiful shoot. Really, really memorable.
Right at this time, Wayne, we start to throw some names at you, and these are people that have meant something to you over the years. And what we're looking for is a one word, one sentence, what that means. It can be anything. It can be an anecdote. It can be however you go. So I'm going to start it off. Danny Morceau.
Class.
Yes.
Okay. Here's one that we know as a coach, but he was a teammate of yours at Geelong.
Class.
Al Westover.
Hard nose.
Okay, yeah, good one. I'm going to go next. Someone who should be coaching in our league, mind you, but he's in Japan, Sean Dennis.
Oh, man. Just respect. Just basketball knowledge, respect. He was just such a leader. Like, he was just, yeah. So if I had to nail that down to one word for Shawnee, it would be leadership.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, James Crawford.
Oh, athlete.
Yeah,
pound for pound, he's the greatest athlete. I mean, you could make the argument that a Calvin Telford and, you know, some of these other guys, and Calvin was certainly a phenomenal athlete.
Yes.
Did he play with you?
I think,
were you in Hobart when he played?
Yeah,
I remember he was in Hobart.
I think he was in the dunk contest.
Yeah, no, I remember. Oh God, I remember that first game he played. Wow,
he was ridiculous.
Yeah, something like 55 or something, right?
Outrageous, yeah. But yeah. I reckon, JC. I mean, because Brad, we used to see him do dunks in practice that no one would ever see, no one would ever tape. There's no iPhone out taking these photos of this guy doing. I mean, he used to do some dunks on Brad and Craig Herbert and those guys. In training, I literally used to go and have a break and go to the bubbly and go get a drink and come back, because it was phenomenal. Some of the stuff he used to do. I mean, he used to do some great in-game dunks, but some of the stuff he used to just do in practice was ridiculously amazing.
And it speaks to the point you made earlier too, though, that a lot of the guys that played in your era would comfortably fit into our competition, our NBL right now. I think we'll get a second thought
about it.
Yeah.
Even some of the forwards, like look at some of the backcourt players that played. Look at Doug Overton.
Yeah.
You know, like look at a guy like that. Look at a guy like Steve Woodbury.
Yeah.
You know, those guys would excel in today's NBL. You put those guys in their prime in today's NBL, they would excel.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
good question about it.
All right, I'm going to throw another one at you. Calgary.
Innovation. Okay. Like Cal and I always didn't see eye to eye, because he just wore his heart on his sleeve. And then in those times in Geelong, I was much more introverted and much more kind of, you know, I wasn't as kind of extroverted as I am now.
Right.
And so, you know, he wanted to get me to do things, and I'd be like, you know, on court and stuff. And I look back now and I think what he was trying to do was inspire me. And, you know, in hindsight, I think, you know, you could substitute innovation or innovator for motivator, you know, they're kind of interchangeable with Cal, but it's beautiful because, and a lot of this is through social media over the last, you know, probably 6, 7, 8 years, we've become even closer through stuff on social media and just connecting in that way. And what more can you say? I can remember CJ when we were in Geelong, we did a promotion down at Mount Gambier, and I think CJ was a little bubster way back then, and just thinking, you know, he's this little kid, and you know, Cal's going to nurture him into to be a player. And well, of course, that's an understatement now if we look at it.
We could definitely talk forever, but I just want to finish on this one thing, and I want to ask your son, how proud it must be that he's signed down there in Tasmania with what's going on there. Talk to me a little bit what's going through to have him doing what he's doing. Of course, we're talking about Sam.
It brings a tear to my eye every time I think about it, every time I kind of have to mention it to someone. Doing this piece with one of the people in the ABC down there and talking about Sammy and just his evolution as a person, and just thinking about things that I thought, you know, in the past, and thinking I would have loved to see more of his college games and things like that. And, you know, and there's always, as we reminisce and we think about, you know, we recall and we get melancholy about the past and all that. And it's been beautiful over the past couple of years to get closer to him, to see him, you know, become an NBA champion, something I never did. You know, closest we got was that semifinal game in Geelong where we lost to Leroy's Brisbane team when he dropped, you know, what, 18 in the second half or whatever it was and knocked us out of that semi. That was the closest I got to a chip. So to see Sam in his, what, essentially his first or second year in the league, become an NBA champion, and to see his evolution as a player, you know, we're diametrically opposed in terms of me being a scorer and him being, you know, an elite on-ball defender who's trying to round his game out to become more of a scorer, is just beautiful. You know, every time I think about it, every time I kind of reminisce about it, every time I talk to him, and you know, it kind of wells me up. Yeah,
that's a great way to finish. Wayne, look, you are an absolute icon of our sport. You still look probably better than you do now. You look better than when you were playing, but that's a separate issue anyway. God, you're all our envious. Mate, thank you so much. Please, you know, continue to upload those videos where you upload, because I love watching them. You just play, and it's just like old school. The only story I want to say is I remember when I was playing for the Sydney Kings youth team, which is the ABA team, and we had to come to Hobart, and good old Cliff Martin's our coach, right? You'd know Cliff.
Yeah.
And I remember we came to Hobart, and you were playing ABA then. Like, you'd retired, but you were helping out, you know, Hobart. Yep. I just remember stepping on a court, and that was the biggest impact with me, is like I felt I actually made it, even though it was the ABA. I'm stepping on a court with you. That's where you is just like unbelievable, mate. Thank you for what you've done, for everything you do. We're so proud to have you on today, and thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, guys. Such a pleasure. It really was. I love these reminiscences and just to see the evolution of what the game's evolved to now. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
How smooth is Wayne McDaniel, buddy? Love him.
Yes. Yeah, like, he was always impressive when he was playing for Adelaide. He was one of the early imports in the game in 83. And he came back with Geelong. And the Sunday Mail editor at that time, I managed to talk him into coming out to watch a game on a Saturday night, because normally they couldn't get out on a Saturday. They were really busy. He came out and watched an Adelaide-Geelong game, and Wayne McDaniel just went off in that particular game. It was sensational. And it was great because we got ourselves another basketball fan in the media, which was really important at that time to convince people that this is what it was. And he was like, and Wayne did it. He just had such an outstanding game.
And when I was doing, like, you know, my prelim and getting ready for this interview, man, 22 40-point games. Yeah. You know, he averaged
50, he's got a 57 in there. He's got a 57.
Right. He averaged 30 points in a season four times.
Yeah.
Like, and you keep harping about this, which I think is so true. There are just names people just don't think about when they think you know what I mean? And what they've done. I mean, that is unbelievable stats. Anyway, we move on. Body, look, the Blitz has been going. Yeah, let's just have a little quick chat about that, obviously.
What do you think? Who's impressed you and who hasn't impressed you?
Yeah, Illawarra has impressed me. It's what I expected. Yep. I'll be honest with that. The Kings, long way to go. I don't like hearing at the beginning of the season, injuries, all of those things. That's not good. That's not good when you're managing people and stuff that. But I will say, Xavier Cooks, wow, in for a great season. And Angus Glover, I thought those two have been really, really good for the Kings. Adelaide, yeah, I like them.
Yeah, 36 is they're travelling okay. You come back from 21 down and you win a game and you go, well, you know, Tasmania blew that. Well, yeah, they did. But for Adelaide to come from 21 down and to believe they could do it and then do it,
You've still got to do it.
It makes you feel so good about yourself. It makes you feel so confident about, okay, all right, we're 10 down, but we've won from 21 down. You know, like, there's just, I like the way their business.
I do. They do look happy, and that's a very good sign. When you see a team happy, that covers a lot of shit that can happen.
Basically. I know. I mean, last year everyone's reaching for the strepsils at every time out.
Cairns, they worry me. But we said we think where they're going to think. New Zealand,
How's that shot from Finn Delaney?
I know. How good was that? Perth, what I expected. They're just so underprepared.
Don't worry about Perth.
Yeah, they'll be fine. You know
that. And they got Blanchfield Melbourne? To come to.
Yeah, exactly. And don't forget, what's his name? Norton didn't play either. So they got plenty. Melbourne, they're an interesting one, like you said. I still think they'll be there. But I know what you're saying. They are a very different looking team. Different looking team.
I'm just saying that as you get older, you're less inclined to take chances with your body. That's all.
Good call. What do you think about Southeast Melbourne?
Oh, I like them. I really like them. I'd have no qualms about them. They'll be in the picture. Definitely in the picture.
Yeah, right. And Brisbane, the last one, I thought showed enough that they'll win games. You're going to have to beat them. All I see in that. You're going to have to beat them. Don't know if they'll have enough throughout the whole season, but you're going to have to play to beat them.
Yeah, that's that. But if you do, then you will.
Yeah, 100%. Yes, I agree with that as well. Yeah. Mate, thank you. That was another great week. And to everyone, thank you to our very cool sponsors, Burger Boss. Thank you so much. To Piranha Media. And, mate, the season starts soon and we're looking forward to it, buddy.
Absolutely am now. Really getting quite excited about it. Looking forward to it. See you, Brad. See you next week.
See you, everyone. Have a great week. See you next time.
Yeah, Brad, you know, Burger Boss, great sponsor, great product, love them. But after talking to Wayne McDaniel, I'm going to go out and buy myself a Chico roll. I haven't had one in years. I haven't had one in a decade. I'm going for a Chico roll, folks. See ya.
No way. I still want the Burger Boss.